Welcome along to the Wise Men's Ear podcast. Plenty to talk about tonight. I'm here with Gareth Barker again, who returns to the show. Although we didn't have a show last week, did we?
No, we didn't.
But you weren't on the ITL, so people will know what I mean. We're joined by James Hunter again from the Chronicle.
Good evening.
Delighted you could be here. And Gary Foster again.
Yes, back again.
Back again.
Like a bad penny.
Well, you're the easy ones to get in.
Absolutely, Paul, no popular demand either of us, I'm sure.
Well, no, you are, because you live local, and, you know, when other people say they can't do it, Gareth.
Yeah, well, we did that. It's not that we wouldn't have you on all the time if we could, it's just, you know, we try and vary it, but, you know, George Corcoran dropped out, and Rob Scanlon dropped out, and...
Well, the people turned it down, distanced themselves.
Yeah, it was like a...
It's just like appointing the manager, really.
It's like a metaphor for everything that's happening.
People said there wasn't a cup of tea and walked away.
Someone failed a medical and... Yeah, it was like the summer transfer window for Sunderland.
I know, well,
went for quality and now we've...
You've got quantity, you've got two of us.
Yeah.
Well, you're on that. I mean, we could start with that, I'll be honest, the quantity-quality thing. Does anybody here... I think it's realistic that, I mean, have a look at the Sunderland team this year. Who are you thinking is an improvement from last year? You'd say Jermaine Lentz, certainly, and you'd say Yaman Veer, certainly.
Yeah.
Anybody else?
Barini,
yeah.
I'd say Toivonen, because we don't have anybody who played that position.
So you're looking at three, definitely three, possibly four. Is it realistic for a club like Sunderland to have more improvements than that?
Well, they need them.
No, but in one transfer window. Is it realistic? Do we have any sympathy with Congerton here at all?
No, not really. I mean, the ones that haven't improved, how many transfer windows have they been here for? Do you know what I mean? So, like, it's not as if they haven't had time to ship out the players that are classed as dead wood or that they don't want or whatever. You know, you can only make that excuse so many times that you can't make too many changes, and when they did make too many changes, it didn't work. I don't think it's about how many changes you make. I think it's about the changes you make and how good they are.
Where are we with it, though, James? Because it's a million-dollar question, isn't it, that every manager comes in. And now, it used to be the same group of players with the same manager. Now we can even say, well, he's changed the players, a higher-calibre manager, and the same things are happening.
Yeah, but they didn't get the number of quality, in inverted commas, signings that De Cavalcar, you know, set out his stall and said that he wanted at the end of last season. You know, the numbers were right, but the quality wasn't sufficient. And I think he realised that, and you could see his frustration building as the window wore on. And I wrote over the weekend, I was surprised that he didn't leave as soon as the transfer window shut, as soon as it became clear that the, I won't say demands, but as soon as the sort of the blueprint, the requirements that he'd set out, when it became clear that that wasn't going to be followed, you kind of realised that he was on a hiding to nothing. I think he stuck around in the hope that the players that managed to dig them out of trouble last season, at the end of last season, with the extra quality that was added, would be enough. But as the weeks went past and the failings showed and players, you know, let him down, I think it became clear that it wasn't going anywhere, and so he said, well, you know, that's it.
It was Bournemouth that did it, mainly for him and for most of us, I would say, as well. That was the game afterwards where I thought, you know what, we are in trouble here. Not that I didn't think we weren't in trouble before that game, but that was a confirmation for me that, you know, I just can't see how we're going to progress from here.
Showed how far away from being a team they were. I mean, the strange thing was that, the sad thing was really that in that first half against West Ham on Saturday, that was the first sign, real sign, that the team was beginning to click. That was what he had wanted, but it had come sort of 8 games too late.
He could have made changes previously, like he did at the weekend. He had players available to influence games differently, I think. Going back to the summer, and there's been a lot of discussion about, you know, he was promised this and he must have come back because they said this and he said that. If those two men are going to sit in a room together and one's going to promise that somebody's going to sign 6 quality players that he doesn't possess, how can you promise somebody something that you don't have? Secondly, how can Dick, who's got the experience that he's got, sit there and take that word and then go away? I mean, they're both as daft as each other in that situation, in my opinion. I mean, it's not. It doesn't mean anything. That conversation's irrelevant. The fact is, which teams. I mean, we discussed this before, James. I mean, which teams outside the top four, top six teams, will go into a transfer window and sign, relative to them, six quality players in a window. Like it doesn't happen. I mean, it's not something that's going to happen. And to go from the problems that we've had over the last few years to come back in this season and just expect that all to just turn on its head, I think it's unrealistic. I don't think this season was always going to be stabilisation. He's not going to go from the team we've had for the last 3 or 4 years to go into eighth place. It's not going to happen. And, you know, I mean...
But I think Gareth, that the point that Avakar made at the end of last season was that the resources should be made available to bring in half a dozen players. I think he's actually said four, five or six, but half a dozen's become the figure. And if you look at Sunderland's net spend, it was £22 million. And that only buys you two quality players.
Where does the money come from? This is the thing. Even if it's there, how do they release those funds within the rules? I think that's a problem. I know we discussed that a lot in the summer.
It is, again,
it's like all these ideas of, you know, we'll just sign all these players for loads of money. Again, it's like we're suspending our belief here, like we do every week when we go to the game and think that we're going to beat every team at 3 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon or whenever it kicks off. We think at the start of the season that, you know, well, you know, everyone's tipping us for relegation, why can't we finish in the top 10? You know, we've got these players and those players, and after five games of failure, the squad's the worst squad in the country. It's like the hyperbole just goes, you know, from one way to the other. We need to just sometimes just take a breath, have a look at the situation and be realistic. And that goes for us, and that also goes for people like Dick Advocaat and people like Ellis Short or whoever, and say, you know, this is what we've got to work with. And if Ellis sold Dick something that he couldn't deliver, then that's poor from him. I don't know if he did or not, because, again, we don't know the conversation that took place. It's just assumed that he was promised.
Today, hasn't he? He's been on Dutch TV where he said he didn't say he wasn't. He was told he'd have the money and he wouldn't have it, which it seemed a bit naive to me, because he said he never told me how much money I had. Well, like, surely that's the first thing you ask.
Well, is anybody disappointed then, if I put it like this, that Advocaat perhaps didn't display his coaching ability, and that it's always about money and signings now?
Absolutely.
Where you have a look, don't you? You have this decorated manager like Advocaat, who's had a long career, success in some places, not as much in other areas. But what's wrong with Court trying to, right, this is what I've got to work with? I was looking forward to saying, okay, his favourite 4-3-3 expansive football is not working with these players. Show something else. It's similar to the Mourinho situation, isn't it? Where it's kind of laughable that he would come out now and suggest Chelsea don't have enough quality in the squad when they won the league quite comfortably last season. Of course they've got enough quality in the squad. Show us your coaching skills. Do something about it.
Well, I guess, you know, in Avocat's defence, that's what he did last season, didn't he? He picked up a team that was going down and kept them up. So I guess there's your coaching ability there. Mm-hmm. But this season, as I made the point to Gareth off-air, that players who he relied on and played well at the end of last season have not produced this season. And I guess as a coach, as a manager, he couldn't possibly know that. Quater's played so well at the end of last season and hasn't done this season. Patrick Van Aanholt, likewise. You know, you can point to several players and
you can't always legislate for, can you? But it's just, to me, Gary, it's a little bit of a feeling of somebody playing on Championship Manager and turning it off, because the season, the players aren't as good as you thought they were going to be, and the season hasn't started.
he hasn't saved the game. You know, I've got every sympathy for him. I mean, it's not so long back that we mentioned that Gus Poyet, I think he'd been on Norwegian or Danish TV or something. And I think he was spot on, really, at the end of the day. I know the managers have got to take some semblance of the blame, the head coaches. Lee Congerton's got to take some semblance of the blame. Ellis Short's got to take some semblance of the blame. But Poyet said at the time, and Avocat's probably thinking the same thing, like, Steve Bruce was supposedly a good manager when he came to Sunderland. Martin O'Neill was supposedly a good manager when he came to Sunderland. You know, for whatever their faults were, and they all had them, you know, Dick Advocaat was supposedly good. Now, the common denominator hasn't been all these managers being extremely poor. It's been a number of players who've been there all the time that those managers have been there. And they're the common denominator, not the managers. And sooner or later, somebody's got to have a look and say, they need to go, and give the new man a rein. I mean, I'm sick of hearing the stop before the start of every Premier or the end of every Premiership season. It's you need to be in the Premiership next season because the money's this. Next season, you need to be in the Premiership because the money's that. Next season, you need. Well, I know there's financial fair play, but surely people who've made millions and billions of pounds and all that must be able. I'm not saying he should be putting his family fortune into the club. I know he's put a lot of money into the club, but surely there's some way to get round. All these other teams who were playing by financial fair play seem to keep buying better players than Sunderland. Now, if they can all do it, surely something's going wrong somewhere.
I guess those clubs, though, probably haven't wasted money like we have repeatedly for years and years and had no improvement, which makes Sunderland as an attractive proposition to a good player lower down the pecking order. You know, we've fought relegation for, you know, this will be, what, 4 or 5 years, really. I don't know.
So what do you do? Do you go down and then scrap everything off and then try and fight your way back?
I don't agree with that. I think you've got to find the right balance between. I believe, I mean, I know it's been touched on. You know, there's been some suggestion that this squad is really bad and the window is really bad. To be honest, I don't really agree that we had a bad transfer window. I thought maybe we were a couple of players short in certain areas, but I think generally we improved. In many areas, we probably could have done with maybe a target man rather than maybe Barini. But you know, Barini, since he's come, I think has been pretty good. I know he should have scored on Saturday, but his movement's excellent and his work rate and design, he understands, he gets it. What playing for Sunderland is, you know. On Saturday, he was on the left hand side and he chased a ball to the right hand side and tried to challenge the fullback and forced the fullback into an error. And that's what people like to see. So it's not like we've brought people in who haven't improved the squad, because I believe we have improved the squad. And that's what frustrates us about advocating what he said today. I think, firstly, he's got a responsibility of the club to maybe just keep his gob shut for now, because if he's saying he cares so much about the club and all that, and he's gone, he can't wait to come back and watch it and all this, for him to come out and say the squad isn't good enough. I mean, if you're a manager thinking, I'm on the fence maybe about taking that Sunderland job, if he's saying negative stuff like that, it's going to, you know, impact people's decisions. And I think that's poor from him, really.
It's not his job to sell the club to the next manager. I mean, surely it's self-evident the squad's not good enough, isn't it?
Well, I don't know if it is. Is it self-evident that the squad isn't good enough, or is it...
Five points from safety after 8 games.
But the manager...
Without a win.
The manager picked the teams. He set them up in a certain way. And at times, I think many people could see that he was setting them up in a manner that was setting them up for a fall.
Setting them up for a fall.
He was setting them up to get beat. With the players he had available, he was setting them up in a way that was going to make it more difficult for Sunderland to win games. And if he wants to play this expansive football and everything, he couldn't do it. He was leaving the fullbacks unprotected all the time, the back four unprotected. It was far too open, and we got carved apart. We need to be more compact than we were. They need to offer those fullbacks a protection because they were out of form. And this is what it is. You're reacting to situations. You can't just keep banging your head against the wall and convince yourself it's going to work because you want it to. You've got to make changes. This is somebody who's one of the most... People keep saying that one of the most decorated football managers is in Europe and all this. Well, you know, show that you're good enough. And I think this season, I don't think Advocaat has shown his quality as a manager, and that's disappointing. I do like him. I think he's really funny. I think what he did last season was great, but I think he probably could have taken some of that and maybe balanced it out a little bit with what he's trying to do this year, once he realised that the players he had available couldn't do what he wanted them to.
It isn't ideal for anybody, this, Gary, but as Gary was saying there, do you think there's a little bit of truth in the fact that Advocaat didn't look like he was going to get this right anytime soon? So if we were going to make a change, at least now we have a full season.
Well, he made a basic change at the weekend, put Billy Jones to left back, which, you know, was more reserved. So he was just played within himself and did the basics. So automatically that strengthened that side of the pitch. Yedlin came in on the right and had a decent game. You know, I think that's one change, and immediately the balance of the team looked better. You know, you can't rely on Stephen Fletcher to play as well as he did on Saturday, as we all know, I think. But the movement between the front three was very good. Toivonen thought was absolutely brilliant in the first half. Thought he was probably our best player in the first half. The positions he was taking up and his use of the ball, clever, strong, his tackling back. But then, why did they do it at the weekend and they don't do it regularly?
Well, that's the thing that. That's why we've backed our heads up a lot, isn't it?
The guy obviously cared a lot. I mean, when the second goal went in, Sunderland went 2-0, he actually did look as if he was on the verge of tears. And, you know, so he obviously cared about the club, and he's tried his best, I think. Possibly, I know we're kind of saying about sticking to the old game plan. Martin O'Neill had one game plan, and if it didn't work, it didn't work, but we'll stick with it, and various others. But sooner or later, you know, how many managers have, I keep harping on to the point, but how many managers or head coaches have come to this club and not being able to turn it around? And there's got to be something there somewhere. I'm not blaming the players completely, I'm not blaming the manager completely, I'm not blaming the owner completely, but sooner or later, we've either just got to say, right, well, we can't bring this many in, we can only bring this many in, so we're going to be relegation fodder again next year. If we don't go down, it's going to happen all over again, and just hold our hands up and accept it. Or do they need to do something extremely drastic? Now, I don't know what the answer is. I wish I did.
What, like the Canio?
Well, no, I mean, that didn't work either, did it? I don't know. I wish I did know what the answer is. I mean, if I did know the answer, I'd be shouting it on air, I'd be shouting it on every radio station, but I don't. But we just never seem to get any further on. It's like Groundhog Day, you know. You just keep coming back to be kicked time and time again. It's like a dog, you know, like a dog that's badly treated that keeps going back to its owner to get a belt. That's how it feels at the minute.
Which we'd all condone.
And the sad thing, the sad thing is that, you know, Saturday afternoon, the first half was probably, there hasn't been much competition, but by far and away the best they've played for some considerable time. Yeah. And then,
It could have been three or four, West Ham couldn't have come playing.
Yeah, without a doubt.
And then the wheels come off, but he was already going anyway as well, whatever happened.
As we said, you've got to proportion some of the blame to the manager and some of the players and some of Congo. The blame can get shared around, kind of. Gareth touched on Stephen Fletcher there, and I want to know what people think about that. I actually looked on, you know, the little time hop up thing you get on your phone, which tells you what you were tweeting and putting on Facebook a year ago. And it was the Stoke game when Sunderland won 3-1. Just before the international break again, and the comments there were how good Stephen Fletcher was leading the line in that game. It must be an annual thing for him then. But he could have saved a lot of aggro if he could lead the line like that. We wouldn't have had to be in the market for the strikers. What is it? Is this attitude, or is this just he can only play above himself every so often? Can anybody offer a logical explanation for it?
It might be a bit of both. I mean, the whole point is that, you know, you don't pay top money. All right, we paid a fair bit for Fletcher, but we're not in a position to go out and buy a superstar. And if we did have the money, then a superstar probably wouldn't want to come. And is that the next level down that you see it in? You see Connor Wickham in fleeting glimpses, you see Stephen Fletcher in fleeting glimpses, but you don't see it for a full season. That's the difference. The guys who do it for a full season are your Agüeros, your Suarez, and Sunderland's light years away from that, aren't they?
So, yeah, but even mid-table clubs find cheaper alternatives of those players who are more consistent. You look at Stoke for Juve and people like that.
Well, yeah, but you look at Danny Ings for Burnley, and for whatever reason he hasn't really kicked. I know he scored at the weekend, but he hasn't really kicked off from at Liverpool because he's gone up another level. And I think you're in danger of sort of expecting. Yeah, you expect them to put a shift in, but maybe it is that level of players that's just below where you want to be. You know, Danny Graham, not the answer, but we keep persisting with Danny Graham, even when the bloke on the street can see he's not the answer, never mind being a head coach with all this qualifications in the game.
I think you've got to bear in mind as well that football is a relatively small world, and Sunderland has got and has been developing for some time a very bad reputation amongst players and managers, you know, for the way that the club is and for the ongoing struggles. It's very difficult to get people to come up here for that reason. I mean, successive managers have gone away, and you know, and like you say about Gus Poyet and other people have had plenty to say about the problems behind the scenes at the club, which never get fixed. And so other managers are going to look at it and think, yeah, I don't know, do I fancy that? I mean, even now we're talking about Sam Allardyce being the favourite for the next manager. Sam Allardyce is a big pal of Steve Bruce's. First call he's going to make is to Steve Bruce and say, what's going on up at Sunderland, what should I do? And someone like Steve Bruce is going to say, I wouldn't think so, don't even think it. That's what you've got to worry about.
You've got to worry about...
Hey, you mentioned that, but don't forget Steve Bruce is the last person that actually managed to complete a full season as manager of Sunderland, you know. And you're looking right the way back to, 2010, 2011 for that. You know, you're looking a long way back. It pains me to say it, even as someone who's not from the North East and not born and brought up a Sunderland fan, but it pains me to say it, that when you're looking for your sixth manager in 4 years, you become a joke, you become a laughingstock.
Absolutely.
How do you get players and managers to come up when that's your situation?
That reinforces the point I'm making at the beginning about have them two sitting in a room together and saying they're going to sign six quality players. Well, what? Are they? Oh, yeah. Do you want to go to this? Do you want to come to Sunderland? Look what we've done. Or there's five other teams in the Premier League who want to buy you because there's agents on the phone to all of them. They're all saying, we can give you this much money and we're going to do this for you and you know you can come here and it's much better for you than going there. And that's the thing. The market now, you know, getting these players, we're struggling to buy the mid-table quality players because we've had our go at that, we messed it up.
Because Sunderland are a long way from being a mid-table club.
Exactly. And we're clawing it back now.
Can get a player or two players to come to Sunderland, they are fairly certain that they're going to be in for a relegation battle. Yeah. And they've got no guarantee that the manager they signed for is going to be the manager in 3 or 4 months' time.
Absolutely.
And they've got no guarantee that it'll be in the same division that they were when they signed for the club.
It's Absolutely. Almost That's like a problem. Massive mental block then, isn't it, as well? Because we've just said there, can you explain how it's a new group of players coming in, the same things happen? But I guess these new players are coming in and starting to lose games, thinking, I'm now involved in this as well.
And there's an atmosphere. There's a negative atmosphere. I don't mean that in a bad way from the fans, because it's only to be understood because there's been so much failure over such a long period of time. No wonder the fans are tetchy and get nervous as soon as things go wrong. You know, you feel the same thing in the press box when goals go in. You feel, you know, here you go again. As soon as West Ham scored on Saturday, you thought it's just a matter of time before they get another. You know, there's no confidence around the place anymore.
If they'd kept the 11 on the pitch, I mean, because we haven't really touched on the game, have we? I mean, looking at the game, like you say, first half was brilliant, and then it's another goal conceded in added time, and then. Second half, the foul from Lentz, I thought the first one was a little harsh. I didn't think he could have many complaints about the second one, really. And it's just one of those tackles you're going to get sent off for, and you should know better. But it was really frustrating because he was actually defending and doing all the things I've been asking him to do. And his goal was top class, brilliant goal. Like, you know, it's worth the ticket money. As the cliche goes, to see a goal like that was brilliant.
Well, this is it, and this is one of the things that you have is that the players that Sunderland will attract in their current situation are going to be players that have some kind of slight flaw in their game. So you're going to get a Jan Mvila, who is clearly a quality footballer, but we know that he's got a slightly suspect temperament. Thankfully, we haven't seen that yet at first team level anyway. Jermaine Lenz, again, has plenty of ability, but the slight flaw is, as we saw, you know, he lost his head and got himself sent off on Saturday. But if they didn't have those flaws, they wouldn't be here.
Exactly.
They'd be somewhere else.
I mean, Pantilimon as well for the goal. I mean, he's been pretty good, but that was really, really awful.
Yeah. We've not been sure about him all season. We've had debates about him.
He hasn't been as good
before,
has
but this season, I think even we go back to the Man United game and their first goal, and he didn't try and dive and cut the cross out. He just sort of stood and looked at the referee, and I was a little bit disappointed with that. Probably couldn't have prevented it, you know, if you've been honest and realistic, but you make an attempt to do it, and that was disappointing, wasn't it?
I think to be fair to Pantilimon, you're right, he hasn't played as well as he did last season, but to be fair to him, when your defence in front of you is playing as poorly as Sunderland's are, you're dragged into situations that you shouldn't be dragged into. You have to make decisions that you shouldn't have to make, and you're almost trying to second guess the mistakes of the people in front of you.
Yeah.
So that's I'm not saying that lets him off the hook. It certainly didn't let him off the hook on Saturday against West Ham, but there'll be times when you look back and you can certainly apply that logic, I would say.
Yeah.
I think, Gary, though, I mean, Sunderland, I think we all agree they were excellent first half, certainly the best player all season, probably the best player in over a year, I would argue. Yet they still didn't lose the game when West Ham come back into it and were a man extra. So there is some fighting spirit in there, as we know, because we saw last season when Advocaat came. We saw the season before when they went on that great little run at the end as well. It's the same complaint over and over again. Why is it just we are only seeing it when it's a back against the wall situation?
Well, you know, I don't think it's, I know it sometimes feels that way, but I don't think it's that the players don't care. So maybe when it is backs against the wall, they're busting an extra cut or they're trying.
Well, yeah, that's it.
But I mean, it's a case of everything, you know, everything's coming at you at once. You're getting the mistakes and they're proving costly. You haven't got the quality at the other end of the field sometimes when you need it. You're not getting the refereeing decisions that you maybe want. I mean, you know, Bournemouth, the referee didn't cost them the game at Bournemouth by any stretch of the imagination, but again, got some big decisions wrong. Saturday, couldn't really fault the referee for his send-off of Lens, but you've got to then say, Mark Noble not have to go.
And he was dreadful all the way through, generally.
And it's a culmination of things. I'm not looking for excuses. We've been poor. We've got nobody to blame for that other than ourselves. I think it's a case of, like, it hurts you more. Like, when you're playing well, sometimes them decisions don't even get noticed because afterwards you're like, oh, yeah, but it didn't really matter because we did this, that and the other and we were all right. And then, but when it, like, when you're really down there struggling, and I think those decisions tend to stand out more, and I think the errors tend to stand out more. You know, we're waiting. At times it feels like the crowd's actually waiting for them to drop a clanger so they can go, oh, my God, here we go again. and that's not me having to go at the crowd because I'm in there with them. Do you know what I mean? And it's like, it's just, like I say, it's this feeling of groundhog day. We seem to feel like we know what's coming before it hits us.
It's the opposite of what a home ground's supposed to do to your team, isn't it?
Yeah. I think when Barini went through and missed that chance, that was
the turning point.
That you felt more...
That and the Lens sending off, obviously. Yeah. Those were the two turning points, because there's a world difference between 3-0 and 2-1 at half-time.
Yeah, and the guy that was next to me that kept going, that's going to cost us, you know, that's going to cost us, you know, that's going to cost us. And he was right, but I was like, please just shut up, will you? Yeah.
Right? I think I was saying that to you, Gareth, as well. But I mean, I kept saying, you can't miss that. Yeah.
Brilliant move as well. Yeah. One of Fletcher's little flicks worked, so that'll be... probably a time hop next year. So Fletcher did a flick and it worked.
But it's interesting. You mentioned the home ground and what have you, Stephen. I mean, I did an interview for a rival radio station last night.
We're not affiliated with a radio station. Are you technically?
That's true. Okay, fair enough.
But you can listen to Into the Light every Thursday on Sun FM.
And they were asking me about how crowds are holding up at the Stadium of Light, and to be honest with you, 43,000 there again on Saturday, on bearing in mind the sort of diet of very, very thin gruel that Sunderland fans have had for season on season now. I mean, it's incredible, and you know the fans are far and away the best thing about the football club, about both the football club, the big football clubs in the North East, to be honest with you. The support is unbelievable given the deprivations that they've had to put up with.
I think if you look at the game against Tottenham, where we played quite well, and the game on Saturday, the supporters at the end applauded them off, even though they chucked the 2-goal lead in, and even though they lost the Tottenham game, they still applaud them off, and that's it is becoming the North East cliche, isn't it? That's what they expect, that's what they want to see. They want to see Barini running from the left-hand side to the right-hand side to put some pressure on the full-back. They want to see challenges going in, and like in the first half when they were pressing the ball and nicking it back and then using it really nicely, it was great. Cattermole was back on song again, but once Cattermole got booked, it was a bit, this takes the sting out of his game. He can't really do what he needs to do. And then, going back to Advocaat again, did he really need to wait until, 10 minutes to go before making changes in the game? I mean, they were tired, down to 10 men. He probably could have brought Larsson on soon. He had Toivonen playing from the right-hand side. I mean,
Larsson's an excellent substitute to have, and he hasn't been used anywhere near enough this season from the bench, in my opinion.
I'd agree. Yeah,
because he gives you that energy. He's got a little bit of a bite. He can spot a pass as well. He's also going to be on when other players are tired.
Free kicks.
That was one criticism of Advocaat I would certainly have.
And I remember the Man United game when they were bringing Seb Larsson on, and they were bringing Schweinsteiger on, and that sort of nailed it for me. Seb Larsson, decent player, tries hard, probably championship at best for me.
But again, I would point to that as another reason. That was a questionable change in the game at that time. They were 2-0 down with about 20 minutes to go, and they brought Seb Larsson on just to sit in the midfield. I mean, what's the point in that? You've just decided you decided that you've lost with 20 minutes to go. I don't know. I mean, that, and then on Saturday when they could do with some energy and legs and, you know, desire in that midfield. He doesn't bring Larsson on until, 10 minutes to go.
I don't think he's not trying, but if he already knows he's going, he said he'd already decided he was going, whatever happened, he was going. And then maybe his mind's not on the... Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Maybe his mind's not... He's looking around going, well, this is the last time I'll see this or whatever. Maybe his mind wasn't really on things as it should have been. I don't know. I'm just sort of putting things out there.
I think criticism we've had of Advocaat, isn't it, that he doesn't...
Alan Clark in particular.
He doesn't make his substitute.
Well, Alan Clark's seen him off.
Yeah.
You know, Dick was saying I want rid of Alan Clark, and Alan Clark has seen off Dick. So
that's the highlight of Dick Advocaat's reign. Yeah. He wanted Craig, one of our colleagues, to be sacked because of something he wrote.
About his rubbish substitutions.
Yeah.
So, exactly. You know, needless to say, he had the last laugh.
Absolutely.
Well, actually, none of us are laughing over, really.
No.
Dick's had the last laugh, damn.
Yeah.
Damn you, Dick.
I think Dick was actually laughing when he said that.
Yeah.
Does anybody have an overwhelming or a preferred choice to come in and take things on from here?
Well, I've saw all the sort of names that's been mentioned, and my...
You cried yourself to sleep.
My resounding opinion is, like, Brewster's Millions, vote for none of the above.
Yeah.
That's a great reference, that Brewster's Millions. Check it out
if you weren't a child's film.
If you weren't an 80s kid. Yeah.
I think, you know, when you look at the realistic options, the people that are out there, the one that makes the most sense is Sam Allardyce, although you could also come up with a couple of convincing reasons why you wouldn't go down that route, but he's probably the one that stands out because he's available and because he'll play basic organised football. It won't be pretty to watch, but to be honest with you, I don't think that the fans in the current mood are particularly bothered about a spectacle. I think that right now it's about putting points.
Yeah, I mean, I know a load of fans that sort of said, like, who would have said, like, at the start of the season, if you'd said Sam Allardyce, they'd be like, no chance. Yeah. I think because they think he would keep them up, none about the brand of football.
I'll probably put myself in that seat.
But if you look at the job he did at West Ham, and I think, like, the West Ham fans really didn't like him, so I think he could have done any. They could have finished sixth, and there was still one rid of him for X, Y, and Z reasons.
But West Ham's the academy of football. They expect to play Barcelona football. You know,
won the World Cup.
Won the World Cup. You know, I believe Bobby Moore once played there. Apparently, so I'm told.
Alan Ball didn't, but he won the World Cup. Yeah. You know.
But if you look at how he progressed that team from last season. Obviously, before he left, I thought when they came to Sunderland, they were excellent, the way they played football. Yeah. And that was a progression in his style.
Yeah.
And you have to give it to him. He was getting criticised for playing football a certain way, and he totally changed the way they played last season. He played a different style, system and everything. So I think that's a positive thing. My reservation around Sam Allardyce before was... the logic behind the appointment, where he's somebody who's like basically said, I will never work with a director of football, and he's got it written into his contract at West Ham that he never worked with a director of football, so it was never going to happen anyway because he's not going to come. But now Congerton looks as though he might well be going, which has been talked about. I don't know if he is or isn't. If he does go, then Allardyce is the logic of replacement.
The three things you will get with a big Sam team is they'll be quick, either getting the ball up there quick, or they'll be quick up top, they'll be strong, and they won't go down without a fight. I mean, I don't particularly like his brand of football, but the three things you could probably see that Sunderland need at the minute are pace, a bit of battle about them, and the fact that, you know, they're not going to get knocked off the ball and not going to get pushed aside easily by teams, and I think he ticks all three of those boxes.
He had some good players at Bolton at times. I mean, yeah, Campbell, Kocher, you know, he did some good. It's not a myth entirely about Allardyce, but
his reputation for direct football came from the time at Bolton when he was working with a certain set of resources.
Exactly. But that's something that you've got to look at as a positive, because he's been at two football clubs there and he's changed the way he's played depending on the players he's got. That's something we look at the managers that we've had over the years, and they can't change if they try.
That's what Mark Hughes is in the process of doing at Stoke. Changing from the Tony Pulis more direct style to something different.
And he did that.
It takes time.
Good,
it's not
team
easy.
At Blackburn as well.
And like Gareth says, if we are being unrealistic about how many players we bring in one particular window, maybe he's got the wherewithal about him to make a silk purse out of a sow's ear that what he comes into, and just make do with what he's got, and then go again next summer with one or two and make do with what he's got, and then it might be a slow evolution, but I think whoever comes in, surely we need to get at least one or two seasons out of them. Do you know what I mean? We haven't even got a full season out of the last lot.
That's the thing, you know. That's the worry. A manager looking at the job now, you know, he's going to think to himself, "Well, I can take the job now in October, but if the team's in the relegation zone, what's the odds that I might be in March with 10 games to go?"
Yeah. The other thing is, I mean, Dick hasn't been forced out. Do you know what I mean? He hasn't been sacked. He's decided to walk away. And I think
that's how that on that given. Point. Sorry, that there's a little bit of clever narrative there, like around the whole, because he is a bit Teflon in the advocate, let's be honest. Nobody can have a go about anything. I don't dislike him, I'm just saying that this whole, well, he didn't take any compensation. He was resigned. He wasn't sacked. He wouldn't be like, I'm resigning, and I want £500,000.
What's the one thing that somebody always says to you about Dick Advocaat? He's never had a team relegated. So he can still say that, can't he? He's walked away before.
But you know, he doesn't need the money. He wasn't coming back to Sunderland for career advancement. No, he came back because I believe, from speaking to him, that he genuinely thought that he could help the club move forward. And I think he's left because he's realised that, in actual fact, given the set of circumstances, that's not the case. And he's thinking, if I can't take the club forward, then what's the point of him?
You should have had a word with him at the time and said, really? Do you think that? Ooh.
Well, you know,
I'm not sure about that.
He's got my number.
Yeah. Luke Headley on Twitter asks, why not Dyche? And then he adds, don't use the 4-4-2 argument, which is probably directed at me, because that's exactly what I'll...
4-4-2,
that's what we would have...
I am using the 4-4-2.
It's what we would have come back with, to be
but
fair.
Why... Right, we all know how big Sunderland could be if we ever got it right, but that's because we like Sunderland, we're Sunderland fans. So why would he swap a team that are going back for promotion to swap it to go back to fight another relegation battle? I mean...
I think
if he got offered, it's the same when people are saying about Allardyce, like, oh, he's already turned it down. He's saying no. There's a difference between sort of ruling yourself out from a job until you actually get offered the job by somebody.
To speak about another radio station, I know you say you're not affiliated, but had Talk Sport on this morning.
That was a rival that I dare not speak.
I nearly leapt out of my car with joy when Harry Redknapp said he didn't really know Ellis Shorten wasn't coming. I mean, thank God for that.
He didn't distance himself far enough for me. I mean, he could have at least gone to, like, Mongolia or something like that.
Lived down in Hampshire and saw a drive with a window down to the Jim White.
Some banks to Sunderland's quite a long way to distance yourself.
That's what happened.
If that happened, I think I would be mortified.
I think, I mean, we've spoken a few times about some
it wouldn't be, would it?
Sam Allardyce distancing himself, but don't forget that when he was distancing himself in August, I think it was, on TV. Don't forget there was still a man in the job then. It's one thing someone saying, would you take it, when there's a man already in post, and another thing now when there's a vacancy.
I think he'd like, you know, you get the impression with Sam as well, that his ego to come here after what happened at Newcastle as well, and maybe do something here. He'd love that, wouldn't he?
I personally know the guy who was press officer at the time that Sam Allardyce was at Newcastle, and the day he got sacked, the press officer had given him, didn't know what was happening, but gave him a lift from the training ground at the club, came out and he said, can you give me a lift back, and told him what had happened. And the press officer says to me, first thing he said as he got in the car and told me what happened was, Well, thanks very much for... as he got out of the car, thanks very much for the lift. I'll be back next season to take 3 points off you. And he did.
Well,
that, yeah, not the guy's confidence.
Well, he believed that he could be, Real Madrid manager.
If he'd had a bit more luck, he could have been the Real Madrid
manager. Well, I think it's good, you know, you've got to have somebody with a bit of ego about them who's, feels as though
they're going to
do something. I think definitely Allardyce is the logical choice at this stage if Congerton isn't there. I mean, Rodgers is available now, and I'm not saying for a second saying that he might fancy the Sunderland job or whatever, because he's just come out of a job. He might want to take some time, and he might just think, I'm not going to Sunderland. I've managed a team who nearly won the Premier League.
Well, he wouldn't have to sign Fabio Barini.
No, he wouldn't have to sign Barini's face would be a picture if he rocked up, wouldn't it? But he's worked with Congerton. If Congerton decided to stay, they know each other well.
I think he likes
Chelsea.
Barini. It's just...
he couldn't use him because
he wasn't quite at that level. Yeah, but that's a funny one as well, because again, if Brendan Rodgers got sacked in the summer, and you said to me, who would you rather go for, Brendan Rodgers or Sam Allardyce? I would have said Brendan Rodgers as a no-brainer. If you ask me that now, I think I would rather Allardyce in at the moment because of the position we're in. Yeah. I don't think Rodgers got a team he could work with who were bottom of the league, low on confidence, who were just going to clear the way out of this mess. Allardyce for me would be the... he ticks all the boxes, doesn't he, when you look at somebody like, okay, just stabilise us now for 3 seasons, stabilise us, get our head so we're not treading water every season.
Yeah.
Allardyce is naturally that man.
I think he's you know, I'm not for a moment suggesting that he would be a contender, but somebody like Neil Warnock and Tony Pulis and Sam Allardyce, somebody who's going to come in and do a simple, basic job of organising your back four.
Pulis is under pressure already.
Organising your back four.
Yeah.
You know, that's where it's got to start with Sunderland.
Because at least,
of course it would. But hey, that's at least of Sunderland's problem
right
now.
And we have the attacking players now who can do something.
Yeah.
So if you start with, because like when Poyet was after the Southampton game, he went very defensive, didn't he? And we didn't have any players really up the field to do anything with it. And we feel like with Envia and Barini now and Lens, we have got those players.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think we've been quite down for obvious reasons tonight, but the one thing that's probably a good thing, because he said he was from Newcastle so many times, I don't think John Carver will be putting his CV in, so that's a blessing
in disguise.
He loves the club.
He loved him, didn't he? He loved Newcastle. Shame. I bet you he's having a bloody lovely time, isn't he? He'd just be drinking pints. He's probably on a beach somewhere.
Tell him all his mates came out when I was Newcastle.
Yeah, he'd just be having a, oh, it's hard, isn't it, Steve? He'd be on the phone every day. It's difficult. I love the club, you know. If you ever need us.
I think we keep repeating ourselves, but Allardyce wouldn't have been my first choice, but I think he's the logical choice. Which I don't know if that's sort of, I know it's a contradiction in terms, but like,
he won't come
in
then,
an ideal world,
it's a logical choice.
I think we don't.
Their last doesn't make Jackie White's mark.
I think we'd all be fair to say that Sunderland fans wouldn't mind too much if we lost the first game as well, because then we keep up that pattern we've had with the last 3 managers, where they come in and they lose the first game and then they beat Newcastle. That's, I mean,
are you
suggesting that there might be demonstrations in the streets should they win at West Brom? Must not happen.
That's what I'm saying. Of course I'm only joking.
West Brom
on the side who are just above us, we do actually need to go there and get a result. But I'm just saying, if that did happen, that would be a remarkable stat, wouldn't it? 4 managers in a row all losing the first game, then beat Newcastle the second game.
You'd almost have to call it a remarkable coincidence.
On the subject of Allardyce as well, I know those on the Twitters will probably be familiar with the fellow from The Sun. Is it Dan King? I don't know if you know him or well.
I don't know him, but I know of him, yes.
But apparently he's very... well, he's been quite correct often, hasn't he?
He's been accurate,
very accurate in his... in some of his... he's obviously got a very good source, whoever that might be, but he was suggesting that Allardyce was going to meet Ellis Short on Wednesday, so... He can't be that adverse to the job if you're willing to meet somebody to talk about it.
But is he going to meet him, or is he going to do like Harry did and just play golf at Skibo Castle? That's only... he doesn't even know the man. He just played golf with him.
What's this? Sorry,
that was Harry Redknapp this morning saying that he's seen you quite pally with Ellis Short. He said, "No, actually, I just played at Skibo Castle, which Short obviously owns, played golf there." That was the only link, the tenuous link.
He didn't say that, you know...
The dog's met him a few times.
I don't think he actually said that Ellis Short was even there. You know, he just said he played golf at Skewell Castle. It's a bit like saying, you know, if you stayed in the Hilton, then, you know Paris Hilton.
Well, there's probably many men out there probably know Paris Hilton.
Steady on.
But I... maybe Ellis was, like, doing his scorecard and that because he can't write. I don't know. Maybe that's what it is. I don't know. But... the further away Redknapp is from Sunderland, it's like Bournemouth's not far enough. It needs to be further. It needs to move into the sea or somewhere like that.
Interesting, isn't it?
Submarine.
Sense of deja vu all over again. Do you want to do a quick plug of the live?
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
Is there any left on that?
I don't know.
Do it in case there's some left.
There's hardly any left. Yeah. You need to move fast. We're doing a live podcast on the 14th of October at Port of Call in Sunderland. The money that we raise from the podcast will be given to the guys from Pop Records to put back into their community project that they're doing out of the shop on Stockton Road. There'll be like a raffle, I think, with some quite good prizes. Michael's offered to donate a prize, which is a Soccer Saturday ball signed by like all people from Sky Sports.
Really?
If you're into that, if you like Gary Neville and Jeff Sellen and people like that, they've all signed it, so that'll be in there. But the guests are Michael Proctor, David Priest, Martin McFadden, and I think I spoke to Chris Young, and he's going to come in, and we're going to think it's good for the questions because I'm intrigued by the. That by transfer windows and Twitter and social media and stuff like that, and I always think it's interesting how much abuse people get who are in journalism. So I think you should, have to stand up and justify himself in front of a room of Sunderland fans. So he'd be looking forward to it. He's on holiday this week, so he'd be plotting his.
I'm sure he can't sponsors. Wait.
I didn't sell it to him like that.
Yeah. Are you going to be dispensing rotten eggs at the door for people?
No. Solid objects.
Well, always interesting. Hopefully next time we come back, we've appointed somebody, so we've got something new to talk about, but non-Sunderland, as you say, they're probably going to drop.
Yeah, the live pod won't be recorded, by the way, so if you want to see it happen before your eyes, you're going to have to, you're not going to be able to catch up with it, I'm afraid. So I'm sorry about that if you live away. It's just too expensive for us to record it. That's the reason. Sorry.
Big soz and all that. Okay, from us four here, thanks for listening. Over and out.